Hi everyone, I'm Hayley Haggerty and you're listening to In Case of an Event. In this episode of In Case of an Event, I sit down with Julia Solaris, Head of Engagement at Swapcard. We discuss the importance of intelligent matchmaking in a sea of serendipity in both virtual and in-person shows, some surprising key findings from our recent study of Swapcard events, and how to evolve your event business into a community-driven 365 experience. Well, welcome, Julius, to In Case of an Event. So we met last week for coffee in real life, which was awesome.
Thanks for having me. Oh my God. Yeah. So much hype. We met in person. It was my first business meeting in a year and a half. And then, now on a podcast, we're on a roll.
And it was the same day that we made an announcement that Swapcard and Informa, the company I work with, are actually going to be collaborating, and we're partners now in this whole new world. So it's exciting.
The company is like over the moon for supporting Informa with their amazing events. Needless to say, it's a name everybody looks at the industry when it gets to business of doing events, and we could not be proud to be on your side supporting the virtual, in-person, hybrid, whatever it is, with technology piece.
That's great. And I mean, with an Informa, there's so many industries, there's so many different types of events. You've got your hands full with us just alone, never mind the other clients that you work with. If people aren't familiar with Swapcard, can you give us a little insight into what your platform is and what's so special about Swapcard?
Swapcard is an all-in-one virtual, in-person and hybrid event platform. We do technology for events. We've been doing that since 2014. We started with in-person events as an event app, so as a networking tool, a matchmaking tool. For one of the biggest issues with events, right? Even before the pandemic, it was about meeting the right people when you're attending a large trade show or business events, because closing business at events is what matters, right? For the business events industry. So how do you facilitate that has been at the core of what we do through artificial intelligence and event apps. Obviously, as everybody else during the pandemic, March 2020, we pivoted to a virtual company first. For that time, so we started to create a lot of features in our existing platform to cater for the new needs of virtual events, and obviously grew accordingly. We were 40 people at the beginning of 2020 with 140 now. We had a 400% growth over the past years. We've been working with Informa, we've been working with IBM, we've been working with South by Southwest. So a lot of cool big events that are scaling using our platform, are embracing the challenges of virtual events, but also looking ahead at what hybrid has in store for us. We're very excited actually on going back to in-person as well, because we were built for it and we're ready to go back. We love the in-person industry.
Thanks for that rundown, Julius. I was going to ask you before I found out why you were called Swapcard, and it does make sense because your origins were really making sure that the right people met at a live event. So they were swapping business cards.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. It was about swapping business cards, but digitally, and hopefully not swapping business cards as well, but just like finding the right connections and then make sure that there was engagement beyond the event as well with these connections. So these are the challenges that everybody's facing today in the virtual world, going back to in-person as well. How do we find the right people? How do we create meaningful connections through means of events, whether they're in-person or on virtual? And then how do we extend that beyond the event, right? These have been questions that the industry has asked themselves previously before the pandemic, not just they didn't start with the pandemic. So technology has tried to answer a lot of that for a while, but boy, did we get a boost over the past year.
A boost indeed we did get. And I'm looking forward to even discussing more about the matchmaking element, because that's truly something that's going to be here in that hybrid environment for forever now, forever and ever. So you work with a vast array of clients. We all want different things and we all want to host different events where we have different events, right? What would you say if you were to look back in all the virtual events that Swapcard have hosted, and albeit you've only been with the company for a couple of months, right? 3 months?
Yeah, 2 months.
Oh, wow. I bet it feels longer. So how have the industry's needs and wants evolved over the course of these 12 months?
Wow, please shut me down on this because I could talk about it for hours. You know, there's so much to be said. It's like so much to unpack. In a previous life, I've been the editor of EventMB for 14 years. So I've been looking at this on a media perspective, doing a lot of analysis and research on trends and technology specifically applied to events. So I've done quite a lot of events over the last year as well with EventMB, and then I moved to Swapcart. So I've seen like all the evolution of that, and then been dealing with a lot of platforms also outside of Swapcart as well. And I feel that what Swapcart specifically has been doing extremely well has been to focus on the needs of what, you know, of the market at the right time. And I feel that has evolved through the past year. The beginning of it, the March time, it was all about creating a platform of a viewing experience where there was a good enough user experience to stay there and watch this stream of content coming from all over the world. All of a sudden, everybody was pivoting. Everybody was running virtual events. You know, there was this need of sharing the information that was scheduled to happen, but didn't happen in person on virtual. Therefore, there was like a strong content need, and the experience had to be optimized for that. And I think where Swapcart did extremely well, and I wasn't with the company at the time, was the user experience of it. It's a sexy platform. I like to say that. I like the look and feel of it. It just naturally feels good to watch something, experience an event there. Then the challenges started to evolve, right? And started to become more about the engagement. And we've seen the evolution of that also in the feature release in terms of all the platforms out there, not only Swapcart. Like everybody started to focus from just like once we got the streaming right, the watching experience right, the content part right, it was then become about the networking, the connection. So started to introduce products such as the roundtable, so a meaningful way to connect more people together in smaller groups. We started to improve the networking experience and created more opportunities for sponsors and booths, the biggest pain point of planners across the board. You mentioned so many different planners, what puts them all together? The need to monetize, right? Otherwise, it's not a business. We're just into doing something for the sake of doing it. And you can do a lot of awareness. Don't get me wrong. Virtual events can be great to keep things going. But companies like Informa and South by Southwest, they're sort of put together by the common need of creating a business out of events, right? And therefore, the sponsorship needs become incredibly important, especially on virtual where the ticketing element goes down, right? The price, the revenue from that is nowhere comparable to what was happening in in-person events. So therefore, you have to optimize and scale and change your business model. And sponsorship becomes very important. How you maximize the opportunity for exhibitors, optimizing that experience, the connection, the one-to-one chats and calls, for example, video calls that you can have, the booking, the time on the booths, the facilitating of the meetings, the matchmaking power through AI, that's becoming increasingly important for us and for our customers.
Yeah, and obviously we've mentioned hybrid, and I said, if I don't say hybrid 100 times a day, it's the weekend.
Right.
And there's so many definitions and there's so many unknowns. And as of right now in North America, there has been a handful of live events, but from what I understand, there have been live events. There haven't necessarily really delved into the hybrid approach or lightly tapped on it. But Asia and the UAE, they're obviously probably a bit further on when it comes to coming out of the pandemic. There have been large events. And I wonder if you have any real world case studies of hybrids. And again, it means something different to everyone, but I think it would be really great if you can share some case studies that are happening right now and that are working or maybe not working.
Totally, absolutely. Well, first of all, like it's important to make a premise about hybrid and what is happening right now worldwide, especially if you're based in North America. Probably since 3-4 weeks ago, you may have noticed a switch in terms of how all of a sudden everybody's moving to say, all right, where the vaccination looks like it's working, even though the cases are going up again. So really, you know, we're making assumptions in a lot of ways, but it seems like the business community is moving forward and it's like kind of travel is starting to pick back up. You know, we've never seen these type of numbers for travel in forever. So there's a lot going on in there that it's interesting and it's worth following. The speed I'm very impressed by how fast things are going, which is setting up a whole new set of challenges, like in terms of the hybrid piece and how fast we're going back to it, because everybody was anticipating it being Q4, if not Q1, 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden, that's not happening. Actually, more and more events are at least thinking about local strategy, especially if they're close to big hubs like Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco here in the US, you know, obviously, or Florida, where there's an opportunity there as well. Big metro areas where people can travel too easily because restrictions have been lifted. Essentially, you can go back to meetings. So that's definitely something to keep in consideration. Asia has been going on with ups and downs as well there, you know, but there's no answer. That's why the uncertainty about hybrid. Whoever says they have an answer based on we've been doing a hybrid forever, they're lying, I believe, because, you know, honestly, like, you cannot compare what hybrid was before the pandemic and what hybrid is now, first of all. So that's an important premise to make. Why? Because we have had this massive year-long experience of virtual events. It's nowhere comparable to what virtual events used to be, or even like a hybrid virtual component of an in-person event used to be, right? You used to just have a live stream and you would call it virtual, right? That's not enough, right? We know that. Nowhere comparable. So what are people doing? We're actually currently working on a report we're going to publish in a couple of weeks' time about the future of hybrid, and actually called The Future is Hybrid, which we're going to publish on a Swapcard blog. And we've collected some experiences from some of our clients. Here, one in front of me from Don Franks from the Podcast Movement. And they were like talking about the challenges of having, for example, tangible ways to connect the virtual audience to the in-person audience. Because, you know, the risk of hybrid and syncing these two experiences is that you start having first class and second class attendees, right, with the in-person, especially with everybody pushing to the in-person being the premium experience, right?
Right.
I mean, yes, I agree to that, especially in terms of the limitations and all the COVID sort of etiquette that you need to have in place right now and the restrictions. You kind of have to charge more, right? So it's got to be premium, but you cannot neglect the audience that cannot be there. It's not that just they don't want to be there. They cannot be there. So having like tangible ways to reconnect these two audiences, it's very key and important. And I'll get to a practical example in a second. But how do you do that? Because otherwise, like, I'm watching these people drinking white wine and rosé and having amazing prosciutto while I'm at home with my kids screaming. I'm having FOMO all of a sudden. So you're like exposing me to something I probably don't want to be exposed to. So you have to think about that. So they're sending, for example, you know, tangible gift bags with tangible stuff to they can interact with, some goodie bags with food. You know, there's not obviously that can last and it doesn't expire. So gets preserved and, you know, gets sent to homes for the virtual experience. They have a virtual hour every morning at the beginning of every event just to connect the audiences. Maybe people that are attending the in-person experience from the hotel, right, before they join the actual experience. So all of a sudden they're connecting these two audiences. Some others that we talk to are doing specific activation in different time zones for people that cannot be there. Very important to keep in mind when you're thinking about the opportunity of virtual, extending the reach, going beyond your time zone, beyond the location where you're at. You have to start thinking about those that are connecting from Europe if you're in America, or from Asia Pacific if you're in Europe. So obviously looking at your audience composition, this is, you know, hybrid brings, virtual brings along a lot of opportunities in terms of expanding your reach and going beyond.
Yes, it certainly does. And also, I do think we've hit this hybrid event world sooner than we probably anticipated. And we're still thinking through concepts and we probably need to action on them very soon. One of the events I manage is taking place at the end of summer in California. And my thoughts are that we're going to host the live event, go full on for the live event, and then after follow up with a virtual event. So for the people who didn't make it, there's that opportunity to still connect with the exhibitors and still see the content. But that's putting on another event.
It is challenging. And what you said right now really struck a chord with me. Like you said, you know, we got to do the in-person and then we're thinking about, you know, an extra event that that was a moment for me, because that's exactly the challenge that a lot of people are having right now is planning two events. That's what it is. Like, there's no economies of scale in terms of the attendee facing part, the user experience part. Like, the only economies of scales you're going to get are in terms of the platform that you use, the technology that you use. No question about it. The rest of it is going to be running to events. I mean, I wish I could tell you it was not, but it will. It will be. And that's the reality of it. That's why sometimes people appreciate what I say, because some people are pushing a narrative of having one event with multiple touch points. But what we're really understanding here is that there's going to be two separate experiences that come together at some stage. You can decide whether to get them to come together, but it's still very unclear. And that's going to be based on experience. You know, what has changed the event technology, virtual event platforms after the initial 3 months has been the feedback and experience of planners using the platforms, not the decisions of the platform, not the market, not anything else. It's been merely the use of the platforms, even platforms themselves, looking at other platforms and other events on other platforms of what they were doing and saying, this is what we need to do because this is what people want. So until we know what people want, like, it's going to be tough to say. We can anticipate as much as we want, but what the data that we have right now is just saying that virtual events are becoming a category of themselves. That's what they're becoming. In-person events will not come back to January because there's going to be limitations for a while in terms of travel, in terms of COVID restrictions and parameters that you need to put in place at your event, distancing. So, you know, you at the peak of events, we were going towards experiential, right? Everybody was creating experiences. Like, you cannot do that anymore. Like, because, you know, you can have people packed in a concert hall being sweaty at a academic conference, right? That's where we were going. So how do they come together? They don't. You will unfortunately have to have teams dedicated, people dedicated within your team to the different experiences. But the good news is that the stack, the technology stack, has been built for both. So, and we are building, and we're not the only ones as Wapcard, we're building 12 hybrid related features in the next month alone. So I know there's a lot of stuff coming just for hybrid. I know that it's just about the interaction, just about making sure that you can tag people differently about their user journey, but they're in the same place and you can have multiple data points, or you can put them together under one roof in one community. And community is a big piece for us, right? Even if they don't get to meet with each other, that it can at least go to one place where they've had common experiences, or they can catch up with video on demand from different in-person and virtual experiences. So there is some good news. I mean, it's not all good news, probably. But I also see some people that say, you know, listen, we're just doing in-person or just doing virtual. That's it. We're not doing both.
I think it's very important to make clear that they are two different things. You probably do need two different types of people and teams to run them. And if anything, I find running a virtual event harder than running a real life in-person event, because I have obviously a lack of experience.
How do you find it more difficult? That's very interesting to me.
Well, I think we haven't found our groove yet. It's a lot of work for perhaps not as much revenue as for a live event. There's that balance to still be set, and we may have undervalued the virtual event at the beginning. And the price now doesn't necessarily equate the value that we see in it. Yeah, I think it's more to do with the revenue associated with the amount of work that we have to do to get there.
Oh, totally. No, I completely agree. There's also another issue that so there's a business model aspect of things. And, you know, I'm writing a piece on, evaluating your omni-channel strategy and what makes sense for what type of audience, right? So I think it's really important that to understand that the needs of people that want to attend in person are going to be extremely different from the needs of people that are going to attend virtual. We're probably in a place where for in person, we need entertainment, we need connection, we need food and beverage. That's what we've been deprived of for a year and a half. That's what we remember events for. Like, let's be honest about it. Like, we like to think people attend even business events to just listen to our amazing program. But sometimes they just want to be there to be away from work, family, get drunk, you know, network and do that sort of thing. We have to be honest with it. And that's been what everybody refers to as the element missing for virtual events. Call it serendipity, call it like, let's have fun, let's relax a little bit, let's be entertained. That part is going to be so important. The connection part, the face-to-face connection part, the let me introduce you to this person and shake hand or, you know, do elbow, whatever that is, you know, that's going to be the part we're going to crave for. Virtual is different, right? But also, like, there's a skills problem right now in the industry, which we're kind of in denial of. A lot of people left the industry for good in some cases. So as all these people that have been borrowed to do virtual right now that come from in person for highly transferable skills in some capacity, now they need to go back to in person. So either we reskill for virtual or we find people for the in person, which are incredibly tough to find because having been furloughed or laid off, they're now doing real estate somewhere. Like, you know, I've seen so many of the 20s in their 20s of whatever association now doing something completely unrelated.
Wow, that's really interesting. And you're right. I know 5 people that left the industry, unfortunately, and are doing interior design, real estate. Yeah. And going back to what you were saying about the networking element, that's a challenge in virtual. You're right. Hybrid and virtual is different. Yes, you can make connections. Yes, even Swapcard do it probably better than a lot of other platforms, but that serendipity comes with the live events. The roundtables, Julius, are really great. We actually incorporated some of them in our recent event and they went down really well. I can't say enough. Every other person I've interviewed on this podcast are saying small groups, roundtables, closed forums. And I'm like, totally. If you're not doing that, do it, try it. It's working for everyone else. How else can you actually incorporate better networking within a virtual hybrid environment? Your AI functionality within your matchmaking, call it within Swapcard, is pretty good. What else are you working on to even make that better?
So I want to start off by saying that it's not that like networking at live events was working incredibly well, to be honest.
Yeah, we definitely have rose-tinted glasses on because we miss any type of in-person networking.
As much as we like to think back to it as the best of the best experiences ever, I don't remember that when I was looking at it as a problem. I actually remember that people were complaining a lot about not being able to find the right people to meet at an event. So as much, you know, I miss the serendipity, I miss all of that, but that was a problem we were still trying to fix for in-person events with the use of technology. That's where why matchmaking, artificial intelligence was becoming so important all of a sudden, because you could really add a way to filter through the noise of these large events. Who do you meet? Where do you go? Like, these have been problems with in-person events as well as virtual events forever. So it's not like that in-person events fixed the issue altogether, true, right? It's just like there was more context. There was like, it was also like going outside of your comfort zone. And we're like very much protected right now for all this virtual environment and not being able to go, especially like this has been the revenge of the introverts of us, you know, like finally being able to dominate the world without the cringe-worthy moments.
Yeah.
So I feel that there's an opportunity with virtual as well. But, you know, even in person, once we come back with all the COVID restrictions, even during our meetings, we see that it's awkward. It's still awkward. Like, got to keep distance. You have to do all these like elbowing, you know, it's just crazy. So going back to your question, though, the virtual piece, you know, still a long way to go. But what phenomena such as Clubhouse are showing us or Twitter Spaces is really that people need a way to disconnect a little bit for this constant stream of information. And really the challenge for the planner, as I see the event planner, as I see the event professional, or the person able to connect people regardless of the platform or the medium, whether it's in person or virtual, that's the skill, right? That's what the event strategist does. He's thinking, she's thinking about how to connect people better and sparking those connections. So how can you do that? What Clubhouse is telling us is that we don't want another watching of a Zoom session or whatever. That's it. We're done. We were talking about this. Like, there's people thinking about having live streaming speakers to in-person audiences. Can you think about something worse than that?
No.
Like, honestly, you know, after a year of Zooms and all that, that you want to see more Zoom in person. I think that creating these opportunities, this, you know, as others think about it, as planned serendipity. So creating these small groups, why everybody's going small groups? Because they're spark for conversation, giving moderation tools a la Clubhouse. This is something that we're focusing on. We're doing a test run of our audio-only functionality with a group called Event Profs Break Shit. Sorry for cursing. You can cut that off.
I will just politely beep it out.
Testing it all together with the moderation tools and the audio-only functionality and see how that works out and plays out. But we're gathering that feedback to make sure that the feeling of these roundtables feels as natural as possible.
That's great. That sounds really great. So Swapcard just released the Business of Virtual Events report today, actually. It focuses on how to close business deals at a virtual event according to the data. And I would love to get some more insight from you on the key takeaways from the report.
The most effective sponsorship activation that we've seen from all this analysis of 500 plus events, 50,000 total exhibitors, 1.6 million attendees was content, sponsored content, sponsored session. And we're probably stating something obvious. Are we? Not really, because I still see a lot of planners thinking in that mentality of a booth, a logo, and that's it. You know, we see these roundtables of small groups opportunities as the real way to connect people while propagating a brand message for whatever a company you work with. So that's the big opportunity at hand. It's the most complex one because it requires a meeting design effort as well. It's not just a platform thing. So if you rely just on the platform by itself, there's only so much you can do. And you're going to have artificial intelligence in itself. Great. You have it there. It helps to connect people better to give more context. It learns through the events you do. And that's something cool that Swapcard does, right? At every event, the platform knows more about you and it's going to optimize the experience. Fantastic. But if you don't plan for it, if you don't have a networking session, if you don't create these opportunities at a meeting design stage, then you cannot expect the platform to do the job for you. That's a global rule I would go to.
I'm going to just read out some of your report because it's really interesting percentages. So it says, the data shows that 80% of the time on virtual platforms during trade shows is spent watching sessions. And that figure jumps to 89% during conferences. This indicates significant interest in content consumption. I mean, there's no denying that, but you're right. Some event organizers aren't taking advantage of it. And I think some of that might be down to maybe their clients aren't really thinking about thought leadership. And this is a time to test it. I can vouch for that data along with the thousands of other people that said that too.
But also interesting what we discovered, that most of the networking and the business making and the lead generation making happens before the event. Before that was like mind-blowing, right?
That was an utter surprise for me. So I don't know if you've got the stats to hand.
I do.
If you want to just walk through some stats around that, that would be great.
So we got 80% of the lead generation per day of a trade show happens, 90% happens before the event period in a one-day event. If it's a two-day event, 75% happens in the pre-event period. This is another interesting one we discussed a little bit. It's not like the exhibition industry was doing amazingly well before the pandemic. It's not that like everybody was like compelled to buy show floor. They were probably compelled to have more sponsors, more content opportunities. So there was this rise of this term I invented for EventMB that nobody gave me credit for. But, you know, I have it in a little side of my room on my wall just for my sake. It's called the Confibition, where you will have, you know, half conference, half exhibition. Because that's what people wanted. Like they wanted more content. Even the space we saw at industry events, like these companies getting huge space, they would have seating in it with sessions happening. That's where you would see all the people coming all together because this is interest to know about things happening. So it's not like all of a sudden, if I come to your event, I'm going to drop everything and all the beautiful keynote you put together to listen to what a salesperson has to tell me. You know, it doesn't make sense. But before and after, probably I will. And actually, that goes hand in hand with the second most shocking statistic that I found is like 40% of exhibitors do not answer to lead messages on the platform. This is like mind-blowing to me. Some people on Twitter yesterday that it's actually better than the in-person 40%, but not acceptable to me. I mean, I can't deal with that.
I really find this hard, and I feel like it's making me really think about, well, what are they doing at live events? So I actually have a story for you. We had an event in November, a virtual event. We sent out the leads, but we actually forgot the telephone numbers. Just like a complete error. We totally forgot. I don't know how we missed it. We sent all the leads and we didn't know until 5 days later, a client was like, hey, where are the telephone numbers? And you know what? That was the only client that actually got back to us. So they're maybe emailing people, which is like lazy, in my opinion. Just so you're not doing anything with your leads, and then you're going to blame the event. And I feel like that was very visible in the virtual event. And you can see, like you said, they're not creating contacts, they're not reaching out, they're not accepting meetings.
I could accept that type of behavior until January 2020, where like we were at the hype and, you know, things like awareness at events was a thing, like, you know, like, you know, having your big fat logo in there, like everybody would celebrate and have champagne because the company was doing so amazing anyway and the economy was doing so great that, you know, well, who cares? But like right now, companies are not spending as much, right? So for those companies that are spending, I believe there's no excuse for that, specifically because if there's one thing that puts together all the clients of Swapcart, and in fact, you know, I invite you to check out the post we have next week on the blog on virtual event sponsorship ideas. We're doing a big fat post about it with all the activations we've seen on the platform from all our clients. So with some of the best ones, but that's the pain point. It is how to maximize the sponsorship. Like, how do I maximize that? But to see, to reconcile that with this data, it's very scary to me because it's twofold, right? The client, you know, they're not as engaged. Fine. I mean, I can understand. You cannot enforce that on clients to a certain extent, but you can communicate that better. You can, there's no way around that. And I think some shows, I would say ourselves as well, myself as well, planning events for event MB, I'm going to go outside of it. You know, outside of Swapcart, was using a completely different platform. I did no communication whatsoever to my sponsors to say, listen, you got to follow up with people here because this is the opportunity and you got to be hungry about it. Otherwise, you know, we can do the business with you. This is part of the service I'm providing to you, is I'm reminding you to follow up with leads within an acceptable time frame, because not 3 months onwards, like who's going to remember they attended whatever virtual events they did. So that's I feel the challenge there. It's a communication piece that it's missing.
We've been doing better at that, but we're still, time will tell, especially with the one that we just hosted. We're planning to maybe do a webinar next week with clients that really do actually work the leads well and just give some other exhibitors insights into how to do it. Because I think there is, as event organizers, have to communicate that.
Totally.
And we're definitely not doing that well. Is there anything else in the report? I mean, there's a ton of things, but is there any other stats that you would want to share?
Yeah, first of all, like to frame it also, like, is, you know, even these reports, there's so much going around. These are like 10 slides with data. That's what it is. And it's very, very easy to read and digest, because I know so much writing going around on everything and anything. So we focus just on the data and like really giving you a takeaway from the data. And that's it. So it's simple as that.
It took me 10 minutes to read it. Yeah, I recommend everyone to read it.
The other interesting part is also like goes in hand in hand with what we were saying, because the other side of exhibitors not answering to messages is actually on the other end. They're like exhibitors that are like too keen, for lack of a better word, right? And they start messaging everybody around. And there's definitely like the understanding is that this doesn't work. I don't know if you needed proof for that. Like this is like mentality in sales teams that like the more out there you are, the better you're going to do, even if you get one or two. Well, the news is you won't. And on virtual, even more so. And there's a growing awareness in event planners. We're getting a lot of clients asking us for better ways to block these people out and moderate these people out of virtual event platforms. Therefore, what is the takeaway for planners here? Is that more subtle forms of networking based around sessions, roundtables, networking sessions that are specifically built for it. Topic-based networking, very important. So, you know, let's create a topic. Let's get two people to meet with each other, for example, based on matching that we do on our end. So with platforms like Braindates, for example, like this is not only Swapcard, but that level of focused networking is becoming so important, especially if it's facilitated by a sponsor. Why not? Content, very important. So embedding the content aspect. We've seen that the most follow-ups into exhibitors' booths after a session. That's unanimous. And everybody could say, yes, but this is so intuitive. But is it what we do then? Is it what we sell to these people? Because that, when I see sponsorship prospects, I still see the gold, silver, and bronze, with bronze as the color of, you know, of what we can refer to. It's not the most enticing color. Like, why should I go for that? Right? What is it like? You're getting banner and placement everywhere and all the communication. You're going to get all the communications and the banner. And I see banner and communication all the time instead of like focusing on what the events are about and content. The good thing about virtual is that inventory is limitless to a certain extent. You can really do a lot. You're not in a venue perspective where like you have certain amount of rooms and certain amount of seats. You can like starting to expand.
Yeah, that's very true. There's no need for any social distancing within a virtual event. I want to make sure we cover communities. For me, communities is one step or maybe 100 steps beyond just the hybrid. And I would love to get your thoughts and ideas around what that means to Swapcard.
You know, once again, I always go back to where we started before the pandemic. And, you know, the community 365-day engagement piece is one that has been going since I can remember, since I started EventMB in 2007, like 14 years ago, 15 years, like we were talking about this, right? This is always not something new that, and everybody, like so many companies have tried it. But I think the nature of events such as in-person engagements are, and also this peak of like one big annual events for most initiatives didn't really lend itself to the concept of year-long engagement. So moving from this like kind of up and down, like to really a hockey stick, that kind of from hockey stick to a kind of like flows of engagement from time to time. Bad example. I'll do another one. So the best way for me is to think that right now we're in a position where there's in-person events happening, but there's a new category that started. It's called virtual events. And then there's also the blending of the two, which is the hybrid events, whenever they come together. All of a sudden, we're faced with a much bigger opportunity on virtual than the in-person one. We know the in-person one. We know it's strong. We know it's going to come back. We know it's going to be amazing and great. We're good at that. We know how to do that. But the new thing is the virtual. And that virtual component lends itself very well to a concept of community, much better than the in-person only, right? Why? Because you all experience that. This is out of common sense. You've experienced signing up to multiple events from one organization where you have to reinvent the wheel every time. You have to sign up for a platform again and fill out your profile and start networking again with the same people maybe, or, you know, starting recouping the messages and all of that. So centralizing that activity and creating economies of scale on the user experience and on the planner side, that's the key for me. And that's what Swapcard is working on right now. It's really about, first of all, creating all these silos of events, pulling them all together so that people don't have to sign up for everything again and again and again. They can just be on one website and really see whatever new events are coming up, whether they're paid or free or whether they can see them or not, depending on different groups, you decide that. It goes back also to a very interesting concept that all the Substack, I don't know if you're familiar with that. So the owning your own newsletter and monetizing that, I feel that that's where the event industry is moving to. It's finally moving to owning your audience, owning your community, not relying on just the venue for the in-person or Facebook for a webinar or Zoom for something else, like pulling it all together in one place and have these people interact outside of the in-person events for virtual events as well. But also having that interaction with exhibitors not relegated to one event only, but through the year. So all of a sudden you have a new business opportunity to sell exhibitor booths through the year and get people to engage. with them with activation. We're doing that. We're showing the sort of starting concept of it within Evolve, which is our community for Swapcard, where we do two events a month. And we have our big events every 6 months. And hopefully that's going to be in person as soon as possible. And all of a sudden, everybody in Evolve starts hanging out with each other and we know each other. There's spinning off opportunities outside of it as well on social media. But we go back to that and the people that are engaged with that community, our partners, are still there. We post our job offering there. We have products from Swapcard that we sell there. So there's all a new marketplace that is evolving out of it, that its power is an event-driven community, as we call it. So where we have all these instances of events coming together under one roof. It's a very simple concept and it makes sense. We all understand it, but now it's more tangible because of virtual.
Event-driven community, that's an important phrase that we should all remember. And you're wearing an Evolve shirt. Can I buy that on Evolve Swapcard
and cup
platform? And a cup. Wow.
We'll make sure to send you one here for sure.
Yeah, send me a shirt. And a mug, please. I need more coffee mugs. I need more coffee right now. Thanks, Julius. It's been great talking to you. I look forward to working more with Swapcard on this omni-channel event-led community because I really do think that that's the future of events. And I'm really happy to be partnering with such a dynamic and reactive and proactive company. And thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It's been great.
Congrats on your podcast. It's been a pleasure to be here. And, you know, I'm looking forward to listening to more episodes. I'm a recent podcast junkie. So just started during the pandemic. I'm late to the game. So congrats on this. And hopefully we'll see you on our podcast as well, Inside Event.
That sounds great. I think I would be more comfortable being the interviewee, not the interviewer. If you loved or even sort of liked this episode, please subscribe and rate the podcast, which will hopefully become one of your faves. Stay tuned for more episodes that will give you great support and advice on how to navigate in-person, virtual, and hybrid shows in case of an event.